plant that thing in me, and all I could do was try to take it in a less vital spot. But then the game shifted again. Winslade bounced into view behind her. He slid in a weapon that looked for all the world like an ice pick. He stabbed several times. He was good, if he caught you from behind. The girl who'd been trying to fork me collapsed, stunned and choking. I got my balance after that and snatched up Harris's knife with my good hand. I had it in my left, but that didn't bother me. You didn't get far in Legion Varus if you couldn't defend yourself while wounded. Looking around, I was confused. Where was the enemy? They all seemed to be down, bleeding. Time! Deitch boomed from above us. We backed off, tossing our weapons down. The fight was over. The last Germanica fighters tried to rise, but they couldn't stand. All of a sudden, I got it. Kiwi had been running around, smacking kneecaps. She'd put down three that way. The enemy fighters weren't all dead or even mortally wounded, but they couldn't stand up unaided. In comparison, we'd lost Harris and no one else. "Varus wins!" Carlos shouted at the top of his lungs. I shook my head at him. Now that the action was over, he was all full of grins and war whoops. The scoring committee took their sweet time getting to our pit. Armel, Turov, and Deitch made up the three judges. Both Armel and Turov looked like they smelled something bad when they walked up to our pit. Something real bad. In their defense, they probably did.
"Let's see," Deitch said with a faint smile on her lips. "What's the count here? 1, 2, 3, 4, Varus, still standing?"
She managed to sound surprised. My good arm rose up, and I shook my fist overhead.
"And, oh my, where are your Germanica troops, Armel?"
"They're nose down in the sawdust, that's where," I shouted at them. The tribunes both gave me a brief glare, so I forced myself to shut up. It was hard to do. Nothing seemed to get my blood pumping more than an arrogant officer like Armel.
"All right, then," Deitch said. "That's a score of 4 up plus 6 down. The total score for Group 9 is 10 points.
"What?" Armel demanded, whirling around on one sharp boot heel. "I know you have a sense of humor, but this isn't the time or place for comedy, Deitch."
"I don't understand."
That was a lie. As a near-professional liar, I could see that plain as day. Deitch wasn't good at lying. Most people weren't. Oh, she could spot liars a mile off, but that wasn't the same thing as coming up with your own convincing twists to the truth. "Let me spell out the situation for you," Armel told her. 5 men enter this pit on each side. That means the Varus score is 9. 4 standing plus 5 down.
"Ah," Deitch said. "You're right. I did make an error. I forgot to count Sargon over there. With him added to the group, Varus would have 11.
Armel's face reddened. He took in a long, deep breath and blew it out again, making his whispery mustache flutter.
"Are you saying these things only to irritate me? If so, it's most immature."
"Tribunes,"
Imperator Turov said, stepping between them.
"This is unnecessary. Why argue about the score unless it decides the winner?"
Both officers looked down at her. Even wearing heels, Turov was a head shorter than either of them.
"Unfortunately," Deitch said, "it will make a material difference to the outcome. Clearly, as the third judge and our commander, the choice will come down to you, Imperator. How should we score this contest?"
Turov walked to the pit and looked over the fallen. Orderlies from the bio unit that was on duty to handle the event were helping the wounded and carrying off the dead.
"I choose Varus," Turov said at last. "They put on a better show. That's what these aliens want in the end, isn't it? A good show?"
After rendering her verdict, Turov headed back toward the comfy seats. Her hips rolled as she walked, even more than usual. That had to be an effect caused by her new boots. Armel fumed, and Deitch managed not to smile.
"The score is final," she said. "And with this second contest, it's conclusive. Varys tied with several groups in the first heat, but the second was a clear victory. We don't need to continue."
"Only because they applied low blows,"
Armel complained bitterly.
"Let us pray their alien counterparts will have weak knees to strike at."
"I sincerely hope they do,"
Deitch said. Armel turned on me, and he looked wrathful for a moment. But then his face softened as a new idea overcame him.
"James McGill," he said. "Never has a man so richly earned the fate that awaits you and your units. In the end, well, I truly hope you don't come to regret this triumph. That would be a shame."
Thanks, sir, I think. Laughing, Armel whirled and marched away. When he'd gone, I turned to Deitch.
"Sir," I said, "I'm not sure I understand this whole thing. We're to face aliens next? Is that it?"
"Yes,"
Deitch said, and she looked down at her scoring chart.
I'm sorry you weren't properly informed. Every legion was called upon to choose a cohort as their champions. Of course, it wouldn't do to have full units brawling at once, so we reduced the cohorts to small teams.
Winslade stepped forward and spoke up.
"Tribune," he said,
"I'd like to point out that I'm not actually in the direct chain of command between you and McGill here."
"That's right," Deitch said. "Graves is in charge of this cohort, but the Imperator made a special request. Your name was placed on the roster as a representative high-level officer. She said something about it being good for your character."
Winslade looked pale, as if he'd been slapped. He pressed his lips together so hard they looked bloodless and puckered.
"I see," he said.
I got it, too. Turov had put Winslade in the doghouse. Who knew what he'd done to deserve it in her eyes? It could have been anything from failing on a private mission to forgetting to rub her feet at night.
"Burn,"
Carlos said quietly behind us. Sargon smacked him, which was a good thing, because that way I didn't have to do it.
"What's next, then, Tribune?"
I asked Deitch. She glanced over at the visiting dignitaries in their comfy seats, then turned back to me. Was it my imagination, or was she checking out Armel the same way I'd been checking out Turov? It was a chilling thought.
"Take a break," she said to my team, "and heal yourselves. There's to be a banquet in your honor tonight."
"A banquet?" Sargon asked, perking up. "I love good food."
"Excellent," Deitch said. "You'll learn more tonight, but this whole thing is somewhat shrouded in mystery. It was arranged by the Magua, after all. We are players in this game, but we aren't pulling the strings."
Deitch looked back towards Lur, and I stared with her. A crowd of kiss-asses surrounded the alien, talking and sipping drinks. I hoped they enjoyed our spectacle of violence, which had apparently served the Magua as entertainment. From my position, they appeared happy.
"Look at them," Carlos said, "all sucking up to Zlur. He's got something like 60 toes, you know. I bet they'd lick them all if he asked."
Glancing after Deitch, I saw she'd moved on. If Carlos was going to start saying rude things, that was probably for the best.
"Should I smack down this specialist for you again, Centurion?"
Sargon asked me. "No," I said. "No, because he's right. I also want to apologize to everyone on my team in advance."
"What for?" Sargon asked.
"In case it goes really badly," Winslade filled him in.
"It's tits up already, if you ask me. It's all Kiwi's fault, too. Damn, girl, did you have to be born so tricky?"
"I'll kneecap you tonight," she said. "Then you can ask me that question again."
Carlos laughed and grabbed for her. They began making out, and I smiled remotely. At least they were happy. For now. Chapter 11. To my way of thinking, an invitation to a banquet is something a man just doesn't turn down. Heck, when the mess hall laid out the daily spread of chow, I was always the first in line. Always. So it came as no surprise to anyone that knew me that I was up front at the officers' mess that same night. My arm was in a sling, but that was just to immobilize it. The bio people had done their wet work and shot me up with happy drugs to boot. As a result, I was in a pretty damned good mood. "Hiya, Imperata," I called as Galena joined me in line. She ran her eyes up and down my lengthy person and narrowed them.
"Are you drunk, McGill?"
"No, sir. I'm a winner." She sighed.
"Yes. I'm glad you're happy about that."
"What kind of hellhole meat grinder have we won, anyway?" Her eyes flashed back to meet mine.
"Who has been talking to you?"
she snapped. I blinked, not quite getting it. Lots of people? Mostly they're congratulating me on the beatdown we gave Germanica. Did you realize that Legion Germanica is one of the most hated outfits on Earth? The public looks up to them, sure, but the other legions?
Shut up.
Yes, sir. A few minutes passed, and more people kept filing in. At last, to the rear of the procession, I saw flapping movement. Zlur's six limbs churned, and all four hand-like appendages hit the ground in a unique pattern. Only a Magua walked like that. To me, he looked like a cross between an ant and a chimp walking on all fours.
"Sure is strange to think about," I said, eyeing him.
"What do you mean?"
"That some kind of bug-monkey critter like that can boss us around on our own home planet."
"Don't talk like that," she growled at me. "Ever."
"Right, Galena, sorry."
"I'm your superior officer. You will address me with respect, McGill."
"Oh, damn, I'm sorry. Your first name just slipped out." Turov eyed me critically for a moment.
"I think I made a mistake inviting you to this event. Just about anything might fall out of your mouth tonight. I think you're going back to your unit."
"Oh, now, come on, Imperata. Don't do that. I'm really looking forward to some good chow." Before she could answer, an unwelcome voice called out loudly from the rear of the line. It was none other than Tribune Armel.
"There he is. We are in great luck. Come, Chief Inspector. You simply must meet an amazing person. He's a rising star from Legion Verus. He's only a centurion now, but mark my words, some day James McGill will run Verus. Some say he does so already."
"Oh, hell," I said in a low tone.
"That red-assed bastard,"
Turov hissed at my side. Jumping ahead in line, Armel marched past a dozen frowning officers like they weren't there. At his side was the wobble-gaited Zlur. Coming up to the head of the line with Turov and me, Armel gave us both a wide grin. We nodded stiffly in return.
"Tribune Armel?"
Turov said.
"It's such a surprise to see you escorting the inspector. I thought Equestrian Drusus was going to perform this honor."
"I was under that impression too, Galena," he said. "But apparently Drusus had other pressing matters to attend to."
Galena gave him a brief, hate-filled stare. She didn't like people using her first name, especially if she outranked them. Tribune Armel had a single sunburst as a rank insignia, which was more or less equivalent to a one-star general of the past. Turov, for her part, had two sunbursts. Drusus, the commander at Central, wore three.
"Well, in any case," she said, forcing her face to soften, "we are greatly honored to see you at our table, Inspector Zler."
For his part, Inspector Zlur had been taking it all in. He was an arrogant prick of an alien, but he wasn't dumb, not by a long shot.
"Turov,"
he said, working his tapper briefly.
"Yes, I've found the reference. We've met before.
But what is this oversized beast? What did you call him?
He indicated me with a single pointing finger among many. Turov and Armel both opened their mouths to answer, but I beat them to it. I'm Centurion James McGill, sir, I said. It's an honor.
Zlur's eye groups went to his tapper again.
Yes, the McGill creature. I recall an encounter from the day of my accident.
Aha! Armel hooted. So you've met McGill before, have you? I'm sure you must have a very favorable opinion in that case. I like to call him a shining gem, hidden at the core of Legion Veros.
You are an odd being,
Zlur said to Armel. Then he turned back to eye me again.
Unfortunately, I lost some of my memory files that day, probably due to the inferior networking systems on this dark backwater planet. In any case, I can't remember any details about the McGill.
Dinner is served,
Turov announced, opening the velvet rope that held us all in check. A flutter-fingered waiter rushed us, waving us back. But when he saw the ranks on those epaulets, he retreated and shut his mouth tight. Turov showed Zlur to a table and waved a hand at me and Armel, indicating a different table.
You two will sit over there.
No,
Zlur's translator box boomed suddenly.
I wish to regain something of my prior thoughts. I will dine with the McGill, and this odd, loud being as well.
Turov showed her teeth in the tightest smile I'd ever witnessed.
Of course, Chief Inspector. The banquet is in your honor, after all.
We took our seats around a beautifully laid-out table. The silverware wasn't only silver, though. There were gold handles on every knife, fork, and spoon. But that wasn't the most amazing element of the ensemble. What really got me was the glassware. Grabbing up what looked like the stem of a chalice cut from a solid gemstone, there was no glass, just the stem. I waved it at a passing waiter who immediately approached.
"What would you like, sir?"
he asked me with an accent that reminded me of Armel's. "Give me some of the red stuff," I said. He snatched up a dark green bottle and tilted it to pour. I let him pour it seemingly into my hand, which gripped the iridescent stem. My chalice was a fancy alien-made device. The intelligent glass sensed the falling liquid, and a field flickered into life. It captured every drop of wine and formed a swirling globe that caught the light of the candles in our centerpiece as well.
"Hot damn," I marveled. "Would you look at that? I've heard about this kind of mug, but I've never held one in my hand before."
"Taste your beverage, McGill,"
Armel said. His chalice was half empty already.
"I want to hear how much you appreciate this particular variety of red stuff, as you call it. You should be aware that it cost Hegemony several thousand credits a bottle."
"In that case," I said, "maybe you shouldn't gulp it so fast, sir." His eyes darkened and his face turned red, but before he could shout at me, Zlur spoke up.
"Turov," Zlur said, "do I understand your system of ranks? Are you in command here?"
"You are correct, as always, Chief Inspector," she said.
"In that case, I'm appalled. You allow your subordinates to speak as they wish. Is that a failing in your leadership, or an affectation?"
"I'm sorry if they're bothering you, Chief Inspector. Should I have them silenced?"
The way she said this last word gave me a pang of concern. It didn't sound like she meant she was going to lightly scold us.
"Normally, I would demand it,"
the Magua said.
"But tonight I want to experience the confusion and filth that is Earth. I'm curious about your dim-lit ball of dirt.
For some reason, I keep hearing about it, although I can't fathom what the fuss is about.
We are the Empire's local enforcers in Frontier 921,
Turov said, clearly deciding to take Zler's words in the best possible light.
We're proud to have served the Empire so well.
What an inconsequential statement, Zler mused. Perhaps it's my translation box. It fails to perform well when interpreting fringe languages.
I'm sorry to hear that, Turov purred. Perhaps I could have some of our best techs see if they could fix it.
Absolutely not, Zler said stiffly. That would entail a breach of licensing laws.
A pity.
About then, to everyone's relief, the food showed up. We were served wonderful dishes, including sea brisket, squab, and venison soup. I'd never tasted anything like it, and it was all good. Zler even seemed to be enjoying his food. He tried a few earthly flavors, particularly enjoying the squab.
"Is this a flying insect?" he asked.
"A bird, Inspector," Turov answered. "It does fly, however, yes."
"It's excellent. You will have 1,000 of these transported to my personal ship by morning."
Turov's eyes flew wide, but she recovered quickly. She popped her hands together, and a waiter rushed to us.
"What is it, sirs?"
She relayed the request without so much as a smile or an apologetic shrug. The waiter looked sick, but he nodded.
"I'll see what the kitchens can do."
He raced off, and I could only imagine the hubbub Zler had created with his off-handed request. A few minutes later, I saw waiters deployed all over the mess hall, retrieving every squab they'd laid out on other people's plates. This caused some complaining, but after a few whispers and pointed fingers indicating our table, dissenters quickly fell quiet. Everyone knew our Magua guest had the right to eat our firstborn children if he'd wanted to. After the food was consumed, Zler stopped listening to Armel and Turov. He instead eyed me with a cluster of optical organs.
"You're quiet," he said to me suddenly. "That's unusual."
I began. "Well, sir, I'm the low-ranked man, and I don't want to step on the words of my superiors."
"A wise rule of conduct,"
the Magua agreed.
"But it's a rule that you've rarely, if ever, practiced."
"Chief Inspector,"
Turov interrupted in her sweetest tone,
"if McGill has decided to mend his ways, wouldn't it be best if we all encouraged him on this new path?"
Zler looked back at her.
"You speak to me as if I were a child. I'm not offspring. I'm an adult Magua. Are you aware of this?"
"Of course, great one,"
she said. She looked flustered, and all our easy talk died. Zler turned back to me.
"I know who you are now. I've been reading reports with my off-brain while we consumed this meal. You spoke to Grand Admiral Satikas, personally, when the battle fleet came to erase your planet."
Yes, I might have.
"You were in his reports. Some passages were glowing, others were highly derogatory. Anyone reading those after-action reports would think the McGill ruled this bush kingdom."
"No, sir," I said. "I'm just a soldier. Sometimes I get into spots where I'm in over my head, that's true. But I'm not that important."
"So, Satikas lied? Is that the nature of your accusation? What would be his motivation to do so?"
Chief Inspector, please,"
Turov began.
"Do not speak,"
Zler boomed at her suddenly, loudly.
"I'm now suspecting a great secret lurks here. I'm not sure what it is,
but I have verified that this being was present when I last visited this dirt ball and died. He was also instrumental in the turning back of the Empire's local battle fleet. Today, here he is again at my table. Did you somehow believe these events would go unnoticed? Turov froze, her eyes wide. Her mouth hung open, but she didn't make a sound. She'd been ordered to be silent in the same breath she was asked a question, and it looked like she was going to play it safe. Zlur seemed satisfied with her freaked-out stare. He turned back to me. Armel, for his part, watched the proceedings with a mixture of interest and concern. He'd set up all this, of course, but I didn't think he'd meant for things to get so serious. He wore the expression of a man who tossed hot ashes over a hated neighbor's fence, only to see flames licking at the roof an hour later. Sensing the shift in mood at our table, the rest of the mess hall had fallen quiet. 2 dozen high-ranking officers were all craning their necks, staring and worrying.
"I've yet to hear the McGill creature's response," Zlur said. "Explain yourself."
What was the question again, exactly? The truth was, I'd had quite a bit of wine. Worse, I'd been sailing high on pain meds when I came in the door. What I wanted most right now was a soft bunk and a hard nap. Turov's hand came up to cover her eyes. She looked between a web of fingers, and her eyes pleaded with me to fix things.
"Idiocy," Zlur said, and he turned back to Turov. "I'm reading an odd data stream on my tapper as I scan the McGill."
"He is indeed an odd one, Lord,"
Armel murmured. "Before daring to return to this barbaric planet," Zlur said, "I took certain precautions. A new app measures beasts of all sorts for mental acuity, truthfulness, obedience ratings, and general health. McGill is providing unique input. The app is baffled."
"Yes," Turov said, seizing on the opportunity like a drowning man reaching for a life preserver.
"We've had similar confusing measurements. We test our recruits, and McGill has always been an enigma. He seems at one moment ingenious, and the next dim-witted."
"This explains so much,"
Zlur said, leaning back and seeming to relax. All around the mess hall, dozens of others sighed in relief with him.
"Why he is not promoted, why he acts erratically, why you have endured him without permanent execution."
"All that and more,"
Armel said quietly. Zlur looked at him. He ruffled his limbs.
"You, creature, have never performed an action of import to the Empire. I tire of your misplaced comments. Speak again in my presence, and I'll demand that your organs are removed."
Armel froze. He didn't look happy, but he did shut the hell up. I was left wondering which organs Zlur was referring to. Zlur turned back to Turov.
"I thank you for this experience, servant," he said. "I've always had questions concerning this place. Dark events have unfolded with unnatural frequency on this lonely stretch of the frontier. Can you tell me why I shouldn't request the McGill creature be put down? As a chaotic mutant, he might be dangerous to all of us."
Galena blinked, surprised by the question. She looked at me, then at Armel. Neither of us spoke, as the question had been directed to her.
"We have found him useful at times, Lord," she said simply.
"I can see that. Intriguing."
"My comment was in no way meant as a refusal, Chief Inspector," she said. "Would you like him to be permed? You have only to make the request."
Armel came back to life at this shift in the conversation. His face brightened, and it seemed to me that his mustache curled a little higher at the corners of his mouth. Zlur pondered for a moment. "No," he said at last. "I will leave the choice up to you. Earth has done amazing things for such a small power on the edge of the endless night. As I haven't been personally affronted, I have no cause to order such a thing. Not today, in any case."
"Excellent. Shall we retire for the night?"
"Yes," said the Magua. "But I will not be staying on your cold little planet another night. I'm going up to my ship immediately. Are you prepared to deploy your delegation?"
"Yes,"
Turov said.
"We've chosen our champions. We will send them immediately."
"See that you do. We aren't prepared yet for hostilities. They must be appeased for now."
"I understand, Chief Inspector. Good night."
The Magua left, and everyone watched him go. After he'd exited the room, the dinner broke up, but I don't think most of the humans who attended were able to sleep well or digest their food easily that night. That was a shame, really, considering how good the meal had been. Fortunately, I was an exception to this rule. I was stress-free. The Magua I'd murdered years ago had met me, and I'd survived. By my accounting, that made the evening just about perfect. Chapter 12. In the morning, I was unsurprised to see a blinking red message on my tapper. I'd been called into Turov's office. That involved a very long elevator ride to start off with. When I'd gone about 1,000 floors up and the doors dinged open, I found myself squinting in a gush of honest-to-God sunlight. Walking down a long, quiet hall lined with offices full of hog brass and their underlings, I finally reached the end and started to tap on the door. The door melted away, and I stepped inside. "Neat trick door," I commented. A sour Winslade sat like a secretary in the front office. He jerked his thumb at the next door behind him, where Turov must be holding court. I paused on my way past his desk. "Hey," I said, "they put you back to work already? Flying a desk?"
"Apparently,"
he said, without looking at me. Winslade and I had a terrible past. We'd killed one another with a vengeance on many occasions. He was, in fact, a weasel of the First Order. But despite all of that, when we got into the real shit together and the bullets and the blood were flying, we typically found we could rely on one another. Our last few days in elevators and pit fights had proven that. "Hey," I said, "for what it's worth, you did good down there. Just as good as any of my team. You're a Varus man in my book." Winslade looked up at me. His eyes were full of suspicion for a second. I could tell he was thinking I was making fun of him somehow. But I wasn't, and he saw that pretty quickly. Shrugging like he didn't care, he looked down again.
"Thanks,"
he said. And that was it. There were no hugs, tears, or sloppy kisses. I didn't know if we were friends now or still enemies, but then I didn't much care either. I always call them as I see them about stuff like that. Stuff that matters. Barging into Turov's office like I owned the place, I gave her a big smile.
"McGill," she said, "do you know how hard it was to sleep last night?"
"Was something bothering you, Imperata?"
"Yes, something was bothering me. We almost got erased again. That damned Armel. He just had to go and pull a prank at dinner."
"Armel is a funny guy," I said. "He's got quite the sense of humor."
"That wasn't funny," she said angrily. "He was out of his depth, snide, drunk, and out of control. Even you know when you're in real trouble, and you're better at getting away with stunts."
The thought occurred to me that I could egg her on right now. Maybe if I pushed like Winslade enjoyed doing, I could work her up into a frenzy and get Armel flogged or demoted or something. The idea was tempting, but I didn't like playing the weasel just for fun, so I shut up and stopped stoking her flames any higher. Imperator, I said, switching topics. I'm getting some bad vibes about this mission. Where exactly are we going? She didn't meet my eyes. She looked down instead, fooling with her tapper.
That's classified.
Oh, come on. I'm a centurion, and I'm going on this mission, apparently. Where am I headed? Some people are talking about the whir, about there being a problem out in the far corners of the cephalopod kingdom. Turov huffed, shaking her head.
The whir are a problem, that's true. They're like a deep cancer, a rot at the core of the cephalopod sector of space. But we're not deploying against them this time.
Who then? Don't I have a right to know?
Yes, but I'm not sure I can trust you to keep your mouth shut until the transport leaves Earth.
You trusted me to kill a Magua for you, I pointed out. You trusted me to give you your galactic key back. Both are big perming violations.
All right, shut up, she said,
and she turned back to her tapper, working on it in earnest. What are you doing on your tapper anyway? I asked. Got a new boyfriend?
Ha, I wish. Here, look at the wall.
My eyes followed her gesture to the largest, blankest wall in her oversized office. A shade lowered, covering the window, filling the office with gloom. For just a moment, I figured maybe she was going to make a surprise pass at me, and I looked in her direction again. Galena looked good, as always. Her outfit was a size too tight, and her body moved like that of a graceful dancer. But she wasn't reaching for me. The wall she'd indicated lit up. I felt a pang of disappointment, but that quickly faded, and I became interested in the image on the wall. It began to transform as I watched. The lights dimmed further as the wall brightened, and I found myself staring at a high-resolution star map.
"This is our slice of the galaxy," she began, "viewed from just outside its edge. Remember that our galaxy is really a very large disk, and most of it is flat."
"I wasn't born yesterday."
"Good. We'll see how much your knowledge has improved since you've joined the Legions. Frontier 921, like all frontier provinces outside the core, is about 500 light-years thick. Each province is a slice of this relatively thin spinning disk of stars."
"Right," I said, "and here's old Saul on the right edge of this map." As I said this, I pointed it out in order to show off. Our home sun blinked when I brushed it with a finger. "Now, off to my right would be the galactic core, but that's maybe 30,000 lights away."
"You're doing well. I'm shocked."
I moved my hand over the wall. To my surprise, my finger brought up information on any star it brushed against. "Let me see if I can get my bearings. Frontier 921 extends at a roughly cubic region with about 500 light-years on each border."
"That's right," Turov said. "But we've changed the borders recently to include the cephalopod kingdom. There are several hundred thousand stars in the entire region now, but most of them are useless. Many are brown dwarfs or tiny red suns, so cool and dim they almost don't qualify as stars at all."
"Huh," I said thoughtfully, running my eyes and fingers over the map. I quickly found Gamma Pavonis and poked at it. "Here's Machine World, right here."
"James, this level of interest and knowledge on your part is unexpected."
"Yeah, I've spent some time lately looking at stars with my daughter's otoscope."
"I'm astounded," Turov said,
and again I let her implied insult slide. "I've been curious about the real extent of our chunk of real estate for a long time," I told her, even though the truth was I had hardly cared until a few nights ago. "Just how many star systems in our territory are worth fighting over?"
"Not many," she said. "We ignore 100 stars for every one of them that's interesting."
"So few. Even with the squid-owned stars? What's wrong with them all?"
Many have no planets, or they're circled by only a few burnt husks. Some systems are too full of radiation, dust, or other hazards to be much use.
What's that leave us with, then? 1,000?
Less. Even with the cephalopod kingdom added in, we're dealing with maybe 500 stars that support any kind of complex life.
How many are under our military control? Turov cleared her throat.
That depends on who you ask. As a hegemony officer, I'd tell you all of them, but that's unrealistic. There are at least 100 systems that are governing themselves, or which have no form of government at all.
She stepped near the left edge, away from the side that was closer to the core. At her touch, a region lit up and showed a large, dull red zone. There were a few reddish patches like this closer to Earth, but I could tell right off most of the rebel stars were out on the border of known space. The fringe of the fringe, I said. Those are former cephalopod worlds, right? Can't say I blame them if they're rebelling.
You can't blame them. They're suffering, and making their people suffer. Chaos and anarchy are never pleasant things, James.
Chaos and anarchy? Was that what she called freedom and self-governance? I glanced at her, but I didn't comment because she looked serious. Turov liked order, especially if she was in charge of it. Okay, I said. I'm guessing I'm headed out here into the lawless region, right?
That's correct, she said. We need to make some allies out there. We found a critical world, one that has exactly what we're looking for.
And what would that be?
We're losing ground out there, James, she said, evading the question. Every month or so, another world breaks off ties and declares independence, or just goes dark.
What are we going to do about it?
We're going to build our own battle fleet.
I eyed her, and I decided she was serious. Thousands of ships? Enough to terrorize all these star systems?
How? Shipyards are springing up everywhere in the loyal systems. We've received an emergency clearance to ignore the patents of the Skrull. They aren't happy about losing their monopoly, but now they have new jobs as trainers and foremen to teach the rest of us.
Wouldn't it just be easier for the Empire to send Battlefleet 921 to the biggest rebel worlds and smash them up a little?
Probably it would, but Grand Admiral Satikas has almost finished his tour. He has been recalled again to the Corps.
The Civil War breaking out again? Aren't the Galactics getting along?
No, they aren't. The ceasefire has become tense. The whole thing might spark up into a fresh conflict at any time. That's why the battle fleet is withdrawing again, leaving us in charge. You recall the deal we made a year or so ago, don't you?
How could I forget? I negotiated the details myself.
Don't remind me.
I laughed good-naturedly at the memory, but she didn't join in. Satikas said we'd have to agree to go to war with some neighboring power if we wanted to keep the squid worlds. Is that what's happening out there?
Not yet. There is another growing power just beyond that red zone. But we're not ready to face them yet. Interstellar war fleets aren't built in a day, James. We need to get our own house in order first. To that end, we're building a coalition of forces under Earth's banner.
Who's paying for all this? I asked. I bet the Empire hasn't given us a dime.
You are correct in that assumption. But now we're allowed to tax the industry of faithful Empire worlds in this province. We're funding our own build-up locally.
Huh, I said, looking back at the map. I was impressed. Earth was just one tiny planet on this vast scale. We sure had some outsized gonads even to try to rule a 500,000 star systems, empty or not. You still haven't told me what I'm doing here today, why I'm pit-fighting with Germanica. She heaved a sigh. Did she? Yes, if I wasn't mistaken, she looked a tiny bit guilty. That worried me.
In order to make someone like Turov feel sorry for him, a man had to be in a pretty bad spot. After Graves's similar reaction, I was doubly concerned.
"You're going on a diplomatic mission," she said at last. "You are going to try to forge an alliance."
"That doesn't make any sense at all," I said. "First off, I'm no diplomat. I don't like flag-waving marches or tea ceremonies." She chuckled.
"There will be precious few of either on this journey. What you must do is prove to the inhabitants of a critical planet that Earth's legions are impressive."
I said, absorbing that. "Why?"
"The world in question is highly warlike. The inhabitants are only impressed by forceful displays."
"So why can't we just drop a bomb on them, make them submit?"
"We're not trying to start a fresh war. We're trying to get them to support us, as they did the cephalopods. The squids were their last masters."
Right then, I was beginning to get an inkling of what she was talking about. But I didn't quite believe it. Not yet. I take it they're not impressed by marching around in formation. Our spiffy uniforms won't do the trick.
No. And money doesn't mean much to them either. They're only impressed by honorable combat.
Arena fighting? Combat scenarios? Like the fun you put us through yesterday?
That's right.
I turned back to the big map. Show me this world. Where is it? She tapped on her wrist, and a single spark lit up on the left edge of the wall. Damn, that far out? That's halfway to Rigel.
It's about 300 light-years away, she confirmed.
I whistled. Months in warp. That sucks right there. Unless... I craned my neck to look at her. You weren't thinking of shipping me out airmail, were you, using a teleport suit?
No. We looked at that option, but it's not feasible. It would take too many suits, and you will need supplies. No.
Tapping on the target star, I got a name to come up. Epsilon Leporus, I read. An orange giant K-4 class. Huh. Leporus? Isn't that the rabbit constellation?
Yes. The hare which is chased by Orion the Hunter.
What's so special about this star? She shrugged.
We really don't know. We haven't been out there. We're working from cephalopod maps and using them as guides.
What kind of people am I going to meet out there? She squirmed as if uncomfortable. Normally I enjoyed watching a pretty lady in a tight outfit squirming, but today I had a bad feeling about it. Come on, Galena, I said. You're holding back something. Where's the punchline?
There's someone I'd like you to meet, she said. She can answer more of your questions.
She exited the office, and I frowned in her wake. Her mincing steps left me wondering what I'd gotten myself into today. It wasn't the first time I'd had that feeling, and I was sure it wouldn't be the last. Chapter 13. Waiting around in Turov's office, I soon moved to her high-backed chair and lounged in it. As she took several long minutes more, I started going through her desk drawers. Finding nothing of interest, I leaned back again and put my boots on her desk. The next thing I knew, I was lightly snoring, and my feet were rudely swept aside by a small, angry hand.
"Get off there," Galena said. "Were you actually asleep?"
"What? Oh, no, sorry. Just thinking about all these... Hey..." I'd finally looked past Galena to the tall woman standing in her wake. She was lovely, but oddly proportioned. Her neck was a little too long, as were her limbs. Right off, I knew what she was. Only rogue worlders looked like that, a people we called tech smiths. They were human, but only barely. They'd been specially bred for their scientific skills. The cephalopods had used them as slaves until recently. But all that wasn't what left my jaw hanging low. What I found hardest to believe was that I knew this woman.
"Florimel?"
I asked in a hushed tone.
"Is that really you?"
"Yes, James,"
she said.
"Did you miss me?"
"Every starry night," I said, and we smiled at one another. Galena rolled her eyes and looked slightly annoyed.
"I should have known," she said, putting her fists on her hips. "Centurion McGill, this is Florimel, the scientific lead on this entire project. I don't know why I'm telling you this, as you two have obviously met."
Florimel and I approached each other. I wanted to give her a hug, but I didn't want to freak her out. Her people took any kind of physical contact as a direct prelude to sex, either that or as an attack. Accordingly, I waited for her to reach for me. She did, after a moment's hesitation. She reached up to my broad shoulders and gave them a purposeful squeeze with hands. I grinned, knowing what that meant.
"I think I'm going to be ill,"
Turov said. Florimel turned toward her when she said that.
"Do you need to go to the infirmary, Imperator?"
"If I did, I would hate to see the state of my office when I returned. No, you two shall exit. Take him to your labs, Florimel."
We turned away to exit, but Galena called after us.
Florimel?"
"Yes, Imperator."
"You do know that James is a registered sexual predator, don't you?"
"Ah, now that's just plain rude, Galena."
"Don't call me that. Get out."
We hastily left her office. I didn't know what had gotten into Galena. She hadn't made any kind of pass at me since I'd gotten to Central. But still, she was acting like I was her property. Sometimes I didn't get women.
"James,"
Florimel asked,
"was the Imperator joking?"
"Yes," I said. "She has an odd sense of humor."
"I think she was jealous of me,"
she said.
"I've been studying human social behavior since my revival, and—"
"Florimel," I said, stopping her in the corridor and smiling, "let me just take a look at you. I'm so happy. You haven't aged a day. Why didn't you contact me? I had no idea you'd been revived." She cocked her head thoughtfully. She wasn't a dumb lady. In fact, she was probably the smartest one I'd ever hooked up with.
"You've had sex with the Imperator?"
she asked me suddenly.
"Is that even allowed?"
I made a choking sound. All my dodging, bullshit, and small talk had gotten me exactly nowhere. "That's a rude thing to ask about, Florimel," I said. "You must know you're not the only girl I've been with."
"Hmm. I have an odd feeling about this situation. Are you in love with her?"
"No," I said. "Most definitely not. In fact, I can assure you I haven't touched her since before you and I met." That was true, and I felt good telling her. There had been plenty of other women, of course, but I sensed now wasn't a good time to bring that up.
"Good,"
she said, and she started walking again.
"I must apologize for my lack of professionalism. I felt I had to ask these questions after the Imperator's odd behavior."
"I understand."
"To answer your prior queries, I was revived about 8 months ago. For nearly 2 months, I was a prisoner. At first, somewhat abusive debriefings became a daily routine for me."
"I'm sorry about that, but you can understand why they wanted to make sure you weren't an enemy spy of some kind, right? After all, you did rebel against Earth and the Empire."
"Yes,"
she said.
"Only after I gave them a considerable list of technical information did I win some degree of freedom. I'm now allowed to roam several levels of Central unescorted."
I frowned at that. "You mean you haven't been outside Central since you got here? You haven't really experienced Earth?"
"No."
"That's a damn shame. Hold up a second." We were standing in the elevator lobby now, and I used my tapper to call Turov. She took her time answering, and finally Winslade came online.
"What is it, McGill?"
"I want to talk to the Imperator directly."
"That's not possible right now. She bounced the call to me."
"Well, bounce it right back again. I need permission to take Florimel out on the town."
"What? Are you kidding me?
You're calling to arrange a date for yourself? This sort of behavior...
Winslade, I said.
Relay the request. I need to be at the top of my game on this mission. It's critical to Earth.
Grumbling, he put me on hold for a while. When he came back on the line, he was laughing.
She said you could bang her blue if you want to.
Stabbing at the buttons, I ended the call.
What was that?
Florimel asked me. Fortunately, she'd wandered off to stare down the sloping sides of Central to the busy streets below. I think we're good to go, girl, I told her. Let me show you around town. During the long elevator ride to street level, Florimel explained to me about the vital technical information her people had placed upon the data core. She'd given it to me before her world had been destroyed, and it had consisted of her people's physical blueprints and mental engrams. In other words, I said, in order to learn your tech secrets, Earth had to revive you.
That's right. I hope you aren't upset by my ruse, James. Our technical achievements were on those data files, just not in the manner you assumed.
I chuckled and I shook my head. Don't worry, Florimel, I'm not upset. Not in the least. You did exactly what you had to in order to save yourselves. An acquaintance of mine has often suggested that we all need exactly that kind of lever to prevent being permed.
Really? Does he give this advice often?
Yes, actually, he does.
Sounds like Claver.
I almost fell over when she said that name. We were going through a stern row of security hogs guarding the exit at the time, and a veteran looked at us with pitiless eyes. Did this off-worlder drug you, Centurion? He asked in immediate suspicion.
What?
No, she shocked me, but not literally. Still frowning, he waved us on our way. We exited in a hurry.
Claver?
I asked her at the massive doors.
Did you say Claver? How did you meet that particular rodent of a man again?
The last I'd seen Claver, he'd been stealing secrets from Florimel and her techsmiths. They'd been quite upset with him at the time.
Rodent of a man, she repeated. That's an insult cast upon his character, isn't it?
It sure is. Tell me how he's related to this project. Florimel did, and I was grinding my teeth by the end of the tale. Somehow Claver had edged his way back onto Earth and regained some level of status again at Central. I could hardly believe it.
That weasel,
I said, muttering to myself.
Will you mention a snake next?
Florimel asked, curiously.
Or perhaps a worm? Or a...
Yes, he's all of those and more. You should steer clear of him the best you can. I'll see if I can get him kicked off the premises.
I doubt you'll be successful,
she said.
He's going with us to the frontier. He's an important member of this expedition.
Is he now? I wonder why Turov didn't mention that.
Perhaps she anticipated a negative reaction from you.
I had to laugh. Florimel was getting smarter about human interaction, but she was still very literal, even after 8 months of immersion therapy on Earth. One more big question, I said. What about the target world? What do you know about it, about its people? Florimel hesitated.
I know,
she began slowly.
I know it's a secret. I know I'm not supposed to talk about it, not with anyone.
I sighed, and I gave her hand a squeeze. That's okay, I said. I'll figure it out eventually. Taking her around the city, we visited a museum of art and technology, which she enjoyed very much. Next, we hit a nice restaurant, and finally, a bar. For me, things were finally going in the right direction. After the bar, we had no trouble locating a hotel room. Now one might think I was taking advantage of the girl, but nothing could be farther from the truth. Upon our first meeting earlier today, she'd squeezed my shoulders. For a rogue worlder, that signaled she was ready to go to bed. Like I said, she was a very direct person. Long legs. That's what I remembered best from that night. Those long legs had a way of wrapping a man up in them and not letting go. It had been over a month since I'd been with a woman, so I had plenty of stamina. Eventually it gave out, however, and we slept together. In the middle of the night I woke up and found myself breathing hard. Florimel was gone. I stumbled across the room, and I found her staring at herself